you walk around the streets of the East End, and there's constant touches of awe and visceral delight. The street art, and even just the scrawled graffitis, just people who want you to see and pay attention to them, and the way people dress. And you just say, wow, that looks good. And it fills you with the greatest joy.
I'm Mumtaz. I'm a colour therapist, colour theorist, and author. And on this podcast, I'm bringing you a bright escape from a grey world. In season 4 of the show, I'm focusing the lens on awe. That feeling of something being so spectacularly inspiring that it actually takes your breath away. Awe can strike at any moment, from the colours in a sunset that take you by surprise, to admiring a friend and their confidence to be their own authentic selves. I experience awe every day, but I don't wake up and plan it. It just strikes. And it's one of the biggest motivations in my life to be in that state of appreciation. Feelings of awe for me often come from colour. And that was my starting point for the conversations I have in these monthly episodes of Hello Colour. You'll hear from guests who leave me in awe through the way they experience and explore colour in their daily lives, sharing their stories and passion along the way. Last episode took me to Delhi, where I got to chat to designer Param Sahib Singh. But this time round, I'm keeping closer to home, East London, my home, and also the home of one of the most extraordinary people I've ever met. Sue Kreitzman, who is in her 80s, is a chef turned artist, and colour completely transformed her life. Hers is no ordinary story, just like her house is no ordinary abode. It was a joy to spend time with her and hear more about her connection to colour. So prepare yourself for a chromatic dopamine hit.
Come in, come in. Brace yourself, honey. Brace yourself. Okay, here we go.
All right. So the moment Sue opens the door to her home, you do need to brace yourself. Every space on the wall is covered in art, while surfaces are flooded with sculptures, jewellery, and her paintings and memory jugs, which we'll come on to later. Sue and I sat down in her living room for a cuppa and a chat. So, in season 4 of the podcast, I'm actually focusing on awe and the kind of relationship between colour and awe, and how colour just makes
A-W-E.
Yes.
Like we're in awe.
Yeah. That yes. feeling of just like, wow, there's nothing like this, and you're just completely mesmerised.
It's visceral.
Absolutely.
It is. For me, it's always visceral. It's just, it fills up your veins with colour.
When you think of the word, and you pronounce it differently to me, how did you say it? You said it, I said awe, and you were like,
awe.
Awe. I should say awe.
Honey, I'm an American. We talk different. I've been here 40 years, and I still talk like New York. There's quite a bit. Color is probably one of the number one things. Also, art, especially outsider art and folk art. I've been collecting since I was a teenager. I've been admiring since I was even younger than that. And it is awe, it's a visceral reaction, and there's a wonderful word, horripilate. I sweat, I might cry, I certainly horripilate. That means the hairs on the back of your neck and your arms actually rise up. I'm very easily moved by color and art and people like you, you know, because you are a work of art yourself. And these things, I don't even have words to explain how magnificent it is. And it just gets into your body and it makes you very happy, but it's more than happy. It makes you feel that despite all the nonsense that's happening all around us, life is worthwhile and life is good. And there are people and things and art, just transcendent. And it makes such a difference, and it makes me hopeful in a world where there's not much hope right now.
And I think that's so nicely going to connect to this idea of I want to encourage people to remember to find this awe in the everyday things. Like, just, I think it's that it's best when you're not expecting it, when you're just going about your business and then something comes along.
Something is always coming along. You walk around the streets of the East End and there's constant touches of awe and visceral delight. The street art and even just the scrawled graffiti, some of it is nasty, but some of it is amazing. Just people who want you to see and pay attention to them and the way people dress. There's a lot of iconoclastic people in the East End and you just say, wow, that looks good. And it fills you with the greatest joy. When I don't walk as well, I'm 85 now, I've got bad knees, but I just used to go out on a color safari. You don't, although I love museums, you don't have to go to the V&A, you don't have to go to the Tate. The streets of London are museums, and all of the wonderful big cities I've been to, there's something to see every day. The people, the art, the walls, the architecture. I remember once walking along in New York and somebody had thrown away some garbage and there were a couple of bright red boxes on the floor, in the gutter, and they were slightly wet, and it was a beautiful sight. And I stopped to take pictures of it and my friends were laughing at me, and my friends are all very artistic because they're, oh, there she goes again. But really, if your eyes are open and you have a certain pull to the colorful, the trash that is colorful, anything that happens, that there's a bit of color, there's a bit of verve, there's a bit of excitement, that's there for us. Maybe not there on purpose. Maybe it's just a little accident of splash of color. That's what turns me on, really turns me on.
I think it's so funny that you mentioned what you saw, but your friends could easily have walked past and not even noticed it. But when you start to look at life through this lens, maybe being more open, that's when you spot these things. Because if you're actually looking at your phone or just deep in thoughts and not being in the present, then these things are just amazing things could be all around you.
Yes, and things that people sometimes sneer at, because I do look at people's shoes. I love shoes and I'm always commenting on people's shoes. And it's not about Louboutins, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's not about Chanel's. It could be a pair of Crocs. Oh, yes, there's color everywhere and you just have to be open to it, you know? You don't just have to be glum and thinking about nothing and thinking about paying the bills and all that. Yeah, we think about that, of course. But then there's something that catches your eye that makes everything so much better. People like you, people like me, walking around the street, and people do say things to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I went yesterday, it was just a runner running past me and he was like, just the simple, oh, it's so great to see some color in the winter. And yesterday was a gray day.
Yes, it
he
was.
Just did that as he ran past. And I was like, thank goodness. Like, I mean, I do sometimes leave the house and I thank myself because I'm like, thank goodness I'm out on the, I'm here. Because if everybody was walking around in their black coats and what have you, it's just.
No, it makes people happy.
You're listening to Hello Colour, the podcast that gives you a bright escape from a grey world. And today, my guest is artist Sue Kreitzman. Now, although this is an audio adventure, you can go to my Instagram where I'm sharing video clips of all my guests so you can see what they look like and get a feel for their vibrant homes. Head to MomTazBH to see them. I'll also put that link in the show notes. But for now, let's go back to our colourful chat. It's funny because I remember when I went to Paris a couple of years ago and I made a reel about my time in Paris and I got so many comments. I was like, but Paris isn't colourful. And how did you make it look colourful? And it was like, well, it is there. If you just look,
it's always there. Look for it. Always there. And we went to, my friend Jillian and I went to Germany and we stayed in East Germany. This was long after the wall came down. And there was a lot of grayness. But yes, if you look, there's color. The graffiti in East Germany was amazing. It wasn't like the street art that we find in Bushwick or in Brick Lane. It was more spontaneous and not actually art. But my God, there was color. And my God, there was personality. It was something. So everywhere you go, you'll find it. You'll find it.
You moved to London.
40 years I've been
40 years. Here, yeah. I imagine if you come to London, there'll be this element of awe of this completely place you've heard about and seen and read about, and then you're finally there. So maybe you could talk a bit about what that was like to lay eyes on a place on holiday. And then, of course, you ended up moving here. So that's the next step.
Well, in 1967, when London was a happening place, oh my gosh, then miniskirts and the way they dressed back then, it had not come to America yet. And we saw young women getting on the bus practically naked. All their legs on show. It was fantastic. And they were wearing a lot of color and the hair was all colorful. It was just fantastic. We loved it. We stayed. Our plan was a week in London and then go to Bath and other places and so on. But we just loved London so much we stayed. And I discovered the East End. We discovered the East End. We rode around. We rented an old Vespa. And we rode all around. And I did fall in love with the East End. It was very Jewish back then, and it was kind of dirty, and it was kind of grubby, but it was just, there was so much life there. And the Brick Lane area and the guy who was selling birds and animals and everything, we completely fell in love with it. And I looked, and we were just poor. My father had given us some money to travel, but he was a student. I was a school teacher. And I looked at him, and I said, maybe someday we'll live here. Sure, yeah, right. And look what happened. We're living here. And I'm in the East End. And it, to me, it is the most beloved place in the world because it's full of crazy people. And I'm just one more weirdo. We lived in a small village in Cambridgeshire, 4 miles from Newmarket, halfway between Cambridge and Newmarket. And of course, Newmarket is a great racing town. So it's great if you love horses, ride horses, breed horses, bet on horses, or if you actually are a horse. None of those, yeah. And they hated Americans at that time, it was 40 years ago, and they didn't like us at all. I just didn't fit in. It was awful. And then I got a little place in London, and that escalated until I have this art paradise. Once I got to London, I knew that I was going to be okay. And London, at least the East End, is very forgiving. It's very diverse, has all kinds of people in it, including a lot of crazy artists. And we all get along, especially in this little neighborhood in Bow. We all get along with each other. And they, when I'm walking down the street, people who don't know me, they just say, it's the colorful lady. And a lot of the younger Caribbean boys say, oh, I wish my Nan dressed like you. So cute.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, you mentioned your home that we're in now. And it really is, this is something that gives me awe. Like, I've been to your home a few times, but every single time there's this sense of just like, wow, like, this is a place where everywhere you look, there's a whole new mini world of its own. Just incredible. This is art in every direction and everywhere you look.
Art is life. Life is art. There is no separation. And I am very obsessive and very prolific. And I'm in a constant state of art arousal and a constant state of color arousal. So I didn't grow up in a very colorful home. And when at the age of 21 or 22, I had my own little apartment in New York. I was working as a school teacher. I could do anything I wanted. And the landlord said, we have to repaint your apartment and we're going to have to raise the rent. It was rent controlled, but so it would go, okay. 1962, it would go from $75 a month to 77 and a half or something, I don't know. So we said, we'll do it ourselves. Painted the walls red. I put up all kinds of colorful stuff. We painted the bathroom color. And at last, I was living the way I wanted to live. And I was so proud of it. So I invited my mother and her friend for lunch. And they looked around. And my mother actually said to me, you'll outgrow it. I was 22. I'm now 85. Look what happened. I've never lost that rainbow in my head. Never lost it. And I dream about colors. Sometimes I dream in my that I discover a new color that nobody's ever seen before. And then you wake up and it just fades away, unfortunately.
You can't get it blended up. So We're actually right now, we're sitting next to a table which is filled with your assemblage work. Is that the technique?
Yes, there is assemblage work. They're assemblage sculptures. Sometimes I call them memory jugs, but they're not really memory jugs. They're assemblage sculptures. And I love gold, but I love everything. I mean, I'm very eclectic about this stuff. And you can see some of them are very kitsch Egyptian. This is what happens when, as a child, you spend too much time in the museum gift shops, and it gets into your blood. So, it's so much fun.
It's really extraordinary. Maybe you could explain about the fact of what this art is, because there's a lot of found objects, isn't there? These things that you may found or just come your way.
Well, yes. It's because I do paintings, and on a lot of my paintings, I glue stuff. I'm a big fan of glue. Mm-hmm. And then I do these assemblage things, and I do these neck shrines, which I'll wear anything around my neck. And I also do quite a bit of drawing. So it just depends on the day and the mood and everything. And these, yes, it's stuff that I've had since childhood. It's stuff that I found. It's stuff that I go to the flea market, rummage sales, and anywhere. And I also keep my eyes down when I'm looking on the street. I'm looking for color and I'm looking for crap on the street. In fact, who was the American artist who coined the term cots, crap off the street?
Oh.
So I'm always looking for cots.
Interesting.
And my wonderful friend, Phil Wildman, also an assemblage artist, and he died a few years ago. I inherited quite a bit from him. He left me all his self-portraits and a whole bunch of other stuff, and he left me all his cots. All the crap off the street that he had not used yet. Of course, I have my own cots. What am I going to do with his cots?
My goodness.
I was quite touched, actually. So yes, and I have jewelry that I bought when I was a teenager with my babysitting money. I used to go to Greenwich Village and buy this bohemian copper brooches. They've all found their way onto these or onto neck shrines or glued onto a painting. Always a story. Always. This stuff is the glue that holds us together. It's all profound. It's not just junk. It has meaning. It's profound. It has life. And I am just, you know, giving it a new generation of life. Old Barbies, you know, Barbie got old. She went through the menopause. She is now having her second or third life. So lots of old dolls, doll heads, broken things, a lot of paint, it's such a happy, satisfying way to live. Never, never get tired of it. So it's not hoarding.
No.
Artists don't hoard. Artists collect things, and we might have something for 20, 25 years. Suddenly, that's exactly what I need for this particular piece. That happens all the time. And everything is dusted, everything is clean, everything is very, very, very organized and curated. And we need it. We need everything. We can't throw things away.
And I think it's such a lovely antidote to just this thing we're constantly being told about, decluttering and throwing things away and being minimalist, and it's fed down our throats so much.
Minimalist, that's a terrible word. I don't understand it. How do people live that way? Where's the fun in that? I don't get minimalism.
I'm so glad we touched on this topic. It's something I genuinely believe is killing creativity, limiting authenticity, and just not even giving us the opportunity to consider what the alternative could be like. In the UK and Western culture, colour is slowly being eradicated from so many aspects of life. White, black and grey are the most popular car colours in the world. The most worn colour is navy, and pop into any corner shop to buy an umbrella and all they'll have in stock is black ones. This can be very upsetting for colour lovers. Believe me, I know, and I've been there. For everyone else, it just reinforces that no colour is the norm. And that really shouldn't be the case. Living colourfully, making colourful choices, experiencing its therapeutic benefits will transform your life for the better. You just need to be open to it.
You know about Pantone's color of the year?
Yes.
I had to lie down for an hour before I could even comment on that. What?
I can't even see the white in this place. So no. you're not on trend, I'm afraid.
White, beige, magnolia, eggshell, beige, beige.
It's horrendous.
You know that beige might kill you. You know
so
that.
I've heard. I've heard of that. I've heard of that saying.
You know that. And I believe that because I have a phobia. I really have a phobia about it.
It's pretty awful.
So, yes.
It really shocks me when I go to other people's homes and they don't even put anything on the wall, like no, not one picture. And for this series of the podcast, finding the people who are not doing that, who are making their own worlds and how special that is. And so I went to a Christmas party. We had a secret Santa and there was a girl and she received this beautiful... was like a 3D jigsaw of a rainbow bug that you would make the jigsaw, you'd stick this rainbow bug on your wall. And she literally said, she was like, well, every wall in my house is white. This is never going to go up. So I'll give it to someone else. And I was like, what? I just thought, what?
Are you crazy?
You can't even put up one decoration.
You've been given a treasure of color. We don't know how to deal with people like that. I just don't get it. I don't get it.
It's really, really... just, yeah, no, not no, something no. that I can relate to at all. You're listening to Hello Colour. Today, I'm speaking to Sue Kreitzman, who spent the best part of her life as a chef. And then everything changed. One of the things that has always amazed me about yourself, and I think is a story that is just incredibly inspiring to anyone of any generation, of any industry, any part of their life, is how you completely transformed your career in, shall we say, a stage of life people probably may be thinking they couldn't change their life.
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be lovely to maybe explain how that store, because that store is very much rooted in awe and how a vision and how things just suddenly changed for you overnight.
Something happened to me. It was an epiphany. And I still, to this day, I don't know what happened. It was either a bolt of lightning, or the muse bit me in the bum, or mostly, maybe it was the menopause. I don't know how it happened, but I was told all my life that I couldn't make art. And in school, that was the only thing I ever flunked. I flunked art, and my mother was incensed. She didn't care about art, but I was supposed to be good at everything. And I was a good student, but I couldn't do what they asked me to do. I didn't understand it. I could not. So, okay, I love art, I love color, but I'm never, ever going to be able to do it myself. Okay. So I used to write cookbooks, as you know, and I cooked on television. I traveled all over the world teaching cookery. Wow. I was my 27th cookbook. I was sitting at the table correcting the proofs. And that's, as you know, having done books yourself, it's very relaxing because you've done the work and you're just checking for typos, make sure everything makes sense, continuity and so on. Had scrap paper, had colored highlight pens, and it was, and I was proud of myself because I thought it was a really good book. Everything was good in my world. And my hand picked up a marker and I drew a mermaid. What? And I looked at the mermaid and the mermaid looked at me. She was in control, not me. I think about this, how did this happen? So I took all different colors, I colored her in. She had snakes, she had a fish for a hat. I looked at her, I said, this is folk art. Who's doing this? Who's directing my hand? I still don't get it. And I became completely upset. I never wrote another cookbook. My agent thought I had lost my mind. I probably did. I mean, I gave up a pretty lucrative career, but I started drawing obsessively.
So what age were you at that time?
I was 58, uh-huh. And I'm now 85. Yeah. And I was drawing day and night with markers. And then I on the local market, they had wonderful glittery nail varnish in all colors. And I started with a little teeny brush and a little teeny bottle drawing and painting. And then eventually I switched to acrylics, always finish. And I still do finish with a layer of nail varnish for the glitter and the shine. And then I was gluing things onto it. And then I always loved memory jugs and I could never afford one because they were vintage and special folk artists. So I said, wait a minute, I'm now officially an artist. I can make my own. Years later, I've been doing these for a long time. And I've probably done thousands, but at one point, somehow I started making neck pieces. I call them neck shrines because every single one is, I'll wear anything around my neck, and they are shrines to certain things, and they're cultural mashups, or art, or just folk art. And I feel as a human being, I'm allowed to mash it up. And that's really the focus of my life. So I do that. And I've been doing that ever since. I'm 85, since 58. I've been in a constant state of art arousal. And it was like suddenly, hey, I'm an artist. I really, really am. And people like my art. I've been in festivals. I've done my own curating of big shows. I have a lot of art in the American Visionary Arts Museum, which is the best outsider art museum in the world. They have my art in their collections. I'm an artist. It was a gift from the universe. I'm living a bucket list that I didn't even know I had. Absolutely. I don't want to jump out of an airplane. I've done a lot of traveling for various reasons. I don't need to travel anymore. I don't need to do a lot of these crazy things that women do, or anybody does for their bucket list. This is it. I just want to keep making art and live in color and inspire the world. That's what I want to do. Okay.
Extraordinary. I mean, these are words to live by. I mean, there's so much power in what you've just said. You know, I think we can be too tied to have got to have a checklist of things I need to do. And it's like, well, actually,
that's it. It's the checklist. Yeah. And, you know, people make themselves a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. This is what I'm going to do. But then you miss a window will open just behind you. And there'll be that little glimmer of light and that little breath of fresh air. Don't ignore it. Some wonderful gift might be waiting for you. And the most one, it's just a gift from the universe. I'll never, ever get tired of doing what I do. Yeah.
Absolutely extraordinary. And I feel like that is a beautiful way to sum up this conversation and all, because it's just making us all think, yes, yes to this approach to life, yes to...
You can do it.
Yeah.
And the people who say to me, well, I can't draw, I couldn't draw. And even now I can't draw. I think the fact that I don't know how to draw properly, it makes your work more interesting because it's more spontaneous. It's more yours. You don't have to do what they tell you to do. If I was just to say, well, I think I better take some art lessons, I'd just become another really bad artist. Let it come from inside. It doesn't come from the head. It doesn't come from the heart. It comes from the gut. And you just let it go and let it happen. It's so exciting. So at 85, I'm still excited.
Oh, I love that. And I think actually that's probably one of the keys to a long life is to have the interest. Because I think is that thing is that when you lose interest in things or you don't have a passion, then things aren't as exciting. There's no reason to potentially get going in the day. But when you've got things to look forward to.
You have the passion, you have the obsession. And you don't need a lot of money to start. You don't need a lot of art supplies. Just get a couple of markers, get some paper. You'll be so surprised what will happen. Just start making marks on a piece of paper. It's magic. It's absolutely magic.
Always a joy to speak to you, Sue.
Thank you. It's always a joy to see you. I mean, you are an example of everything I adore.
It's incredible that our paths met, and you know, very, very grateful for that.
For being united
and sharing in these passions. And inspiring others with them as well. Being in Sue's presence is such an honor. Her wisdom really hits home. And to see someone thriving and passionate and breaking stereotypes about what the latter years of your life can be about is so refreshing. I recently visited an exhibition in Paris by Matisse, focusing on his latter years when he was in his 80s, when he took up collaging, and those actually became some of the most iconic works of his career. Now that is something to be in awe of. So find out what gives you awe and follow that colourful path. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to Sue for our glorious chats. You can follow her on Instagram at Sue Kreitzman. And as I mentioned, if you head over to my account, MomTesBH, you can watch some of the videos we recorded in her creative paradise. The Hello Colour podcast is produced and presented by me, Momtaz Begum Hossein. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do share it and subscribe so that you don't miss the next one. The show theme tune, I Dig Your Colours, is by Cellophane Company. Episodes are released on the 21st of the month, so be sure to join me next time for another awe-inspiring chat with a colour lover. I dig your colours, girl. Shade of life, a lot of you now. Tell me what you see in your eyes, a changing blue. Take flight.